And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and we're happy to be joined this week by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well and looking forward to talking about John Kerry as our new climate czar. We talk a little bit about his record and the need to keep the pressure on him, and we even do a little philosophizing at the end, so tune in.
Well, Mariah, the American democracy is making a, shall we say, bumpy landing to a transition to a new president. Joseph Robinette Biden, Joe Biden, has clinched the presidential election. He's president-elect despite whatever machinations the current president wants to throw up. But one of the things that we think made Biden a good candidate for president was that he had laid out a rather expansive plan to address climate change and had put climate change as part of his agenda, basically that he took it seriously. He has a $2 trillion plan, which someday, I'm sure that over the next few years, we'll get a chance to discuss that $2 trillion plan and what's going to happen to it. But one of the things a president-elect can do is to begin to appoint people to his cabinet, right? All the appointments. And I think we've said on this show, but you probably heard this idea about policy. Personnel is policy, right? If you hire a Stephen Miller to administer your immigration policy, you're going to get a near evil immigration policy, right? If you appoint the right people, you're going to get the right stuff. Mr. Biden has appointed Janet Yellen to the Treasury Secretary, which again is an interesting topic that we'll have to take up on a different day. Janet Yellen, because you and I, we've talked about how important finance is to addressing the climate change issue. And I believe that Yellen is sympathetic. It's a good thing. But the thing I wanted to talk about today was an appointment by Mr. Biden of John Kerry to be his climate envoy, to be a cabinet level official whose brief was to address climate change. Right. Did I get that? Did you see anything about that, Mariah?
Yeah. Do you know the exact title? I was trying to get that. I think that, you know, I got excited because I saw him being called the climate czar, which is interesting enough in the book that I wrote with my co-author, Bud Titlow, also my father. We talked about the need for a climate czar, and now we have one, which is like, right? I mean, I think that in and of itself
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking the same thing. Everything I have read about what Mr. Kerry has been appointed to is a quote unquote cabinet level role, right?
Right.
And that means
international climate efforts, right? This is international relations, which he has done.
But if he's a guy in a chair, if you're the Secretary of Defense, you can go back to that big five-sided building called the Pentagon, and you have huge amounts of money and all this stuff. If you're the Secretary of the Treasurer, you go print some money when you want to. If you are a special envoy for climate, you get nobody to talk to, right? There's nothing underneath him. And so the question is, what exactly, I mean, a cabinet-level role to be at the table is fantastic. But, okay. What's behind that? Is that the Wizard of Oz kind of thing?
Well, the New York Times actually said that it elevates the issue of climate change to the highest echelons of government, right? So just creating that appointment has, like, it's a statement that this is really important. We're going to do this. We're going to do something about this. Biden is saying it's a priority. So that's good.
And John Kerry has a long history, God bless him, of being a very aggressive climate advocate. And there's no doubt that John Kerry, for whatever else you want to say about him, he is the bona fides of having been in the trenches of the climate wars for a long time. I would remind everyone it was John Kerry, as Secretary of State, who essentially brokered the 2015 Paris Accord, right, that now the administration wants to get back into. And
His time even goes all the way back to the Rio Earth Summit in 1992. Really? He worked with then Senator Al Gore on the U.S. delegation to that summit. So he's been definitely fighting the climate change fight since 1992 for a while.
So there's no doubt that his heart's in the right place. In fact, I was not surprised, but pleased to hear Kerry get up at the announcement of his role, right, on one of these TV announcements. And he said, yes, we're going to be joining the Paris Accord, but that's just the beginning, right? Which is exactly the right tone, right? Rejoining the Paris Accord is a baby step. We have to do that, right? The question is, what goes past that? And so, but I would say that the appointment of Kerry has been met with a little bit of mixed reviews. Right? Is that fair to say, Mariah?
Yeah.
Tell me, what's the story there?
I mean, so in an interesting point, there have been a lot of progressives pushing back on the appointment of Kerry. There's a couple reasons, I think, for that mainly, which is in part that he was a big proponent of natural gas as a bridge fuel. During his time with the Obama-Biden administration, they were doing a lot with shale and fracking. And so there's a lot of pushback against that. And his work towards that. And I did read an article too back in 2015 when he was brokering that, you know, working with the United Nations coalitions to sort of figure out the Paris Climate Agreement. And his big push on it was, this is a great economic opportunity. And that was the reason why it was so important, is because it was going to create jobs, and it was, you know, a potential tech boom in renewable energy and all of these things, which is all well and good. But is it rooted in the right place in some ways? Not that I'm saying, you know, I think that's a whole other podcast, which we have done, right, about talking about, you know, the true measure of what you're going for. But, you know, it wasn't that it was the right thing to do. It was the best thing we could do economically, was kind of the root of some of what he was talking about. I don't know if he has changed his approach, but
tell me this. Do you think that I think the other potential critique, maybe you were just going to say this, so don't let me jump in front of you, but he's another old white guy. Is that a fair criticism?
Right. There's so many leaders out there who are far, you know, can embrace, have a lot more diversity, that could bring a lot more diversity and perspectives to the table than he may, especially since he has been in the administration for a while, but he brings that experience too, right? So there's kind of two edges to that. But yes, certainly a missed opportunity there.
So the reason that this is a topic of an interesting topic is because we are all at a special moment. We are coming out of a psychologically devastating period where the Trump administration, I mean, we do not yet know the evil the Trump administration has attempted to do and is getting away with, right? We're going to find that out. But we're at a moment where there's a little bit of hope. We think that people like Biden and Kerry are sympathetic to the questions of things that we as climate hawks care about. And I saw this very interesting article by Emily Atkins, who basically makes the case, and I'll go to sort of what she says at the end, that criticizing Kerry and his colleagues is not an act of malice against Kerry. It is an act of duty and care. I thought it would be worthwhile to discuss a little bit about what that means in the context of a guy like Kerry, who's got all the right bona fides, being appointed. What do we do as climate activists? Do we congratulate ourselves and go back to watching The Crown, or do we stay in the game?
Yeah, first of all, just a shout out to Emily Atkins. She also does a newsletter called Heated, which I encourage you to subscribe to. She always has a fresh and unique perspective on things. It's fun to read. But this article was great. She really was saying, we can't relax with a good person that cares about climate. We need someone who is going to do, she says, the best job he's ever done in his life every single day. We are in the 11th hour of this, and we can't afford anyone who's going to sit around and do it part of the way. She said, it is literally the greatest responsibility a group of people could ever have. So it's pretty powerful.
And I guess what I took from the article was that criticizing Kerry, demanding more from Kerry, demanding more from Biden, demanding an utmost effort from these people and being unsatisfied if you don't get it, is the role of the climate activist in this day and age. And I think that Atkins makes the point that the hour is so late, the need is so great, it's incredibly unfair to expect these mortals, Biden and Kerry are mortals, they must do superhuman things, and we must demand that of them. And that is not an attack against the honor or dignity or anything about those people. It's the job of the climate hawk to demand and push for more and more and more. Did you get that out of the article?
Yeah. She says we have to care about our future more than we care about defending Kerry's honor, right? It's not, we can't worry about hurting his feelings by criticizing him or putting pressure on him, because it's a really big and critical job right now.
And I feel personally strongly about this, because I know that when Obama was elected, it was such a relief to think that there was a sympathetic president, that you weren't going to have to work so hard because you had somebody that was on your side. And it turned out Obama, good as he was, you know, he could have done more, right? We could be in a different place.
He had the 2012, this statement about, you know, we've just put in enough pipeline to encircle the world, right? Like, right. That was a real good thing. I mean, that's just where it was.
I think that historically, progressives are relieved to have a representative in their government who is not actively denigrating what they're working on. So as a climate hawk, I'm happy if it's not Joe Manchin is not my senator, or what's this guy in Oklahoma, Jim Inhofe, right? Mm-hmm. Who's actively working. You get someone who pays lip service. I'm not saying that Kerry or Biden are paying lip service. I think it's far more than that. But I think for too long, progressives have accepted the fact that the guy they got is better than the guy they could have. And so they don't push as hard on the person they've got. I think that has to change, right? Kerry is a good man, but we need to keep pushing hard on the Biden administration. It's not, the game's not over, right?
Right. Yep.
And so for me, that raises, so let me just go a little bit sideways on that. You have John Kerry, who has ran for president, almost became president. People would argue that, but for want of a funky computer in Ohio someplace, would have been president, right? He has worked on the Paris Code. He's done all these good things. I mean, he is a great man, right? What philosophical role, what is the role of someone like Kerry, who is honestly in a position to do great things because he is at the levers of power, he knows all the right stuff. Is that how history is written? Is history written by the great men of history, or by the people like you and I and the people listening to this podcast that are pushing them to do the right thing? I leave it to you, Mariah.
That's
a 1970s joke that you probably weren't even born for, but that was. Is that a fair thing to say that the great people of history, I won't say men anymore, the great people, they are the ones that matter and they make things happen?
No, I mean, I think you need both, right? I think that, you know, you can't, there's a great quote in Hadestown that I'm not going to get, but that Hadestown is a musical that was fantastic. But it's the idea of, you feel strong when you know there's a lot of people backing you. It's easier to feel strong when you've got people supporting you. If you're alone, it's a lot harder to be brave. And so, I mean, I think there's a dual piece of it there, that you do need to have support. You need to know you have a groundswell of people who want the change. And, you know, even as a leader the climate movement has had so many strong, charismatic leaders of all races and genders, and they've moved the needle for sure, but not to the place that we need to. And some of that is because there's not enough of a groundswell of people saying, why are we not doing this? It's coming. We're getting closer to it. But that, you know, emergent change that we want to see become policies and become action hasn't happened yet because there's not the political and social will behind it that we need to move forward. So I think you need both. I think you need a charismatic leader with a lot of political and social will backing them up.
I have to agree. I mean, So let me just say, completely off kind of the cuff, since I don't really have research, but it seems to me that a great man like Martin Luther King could only have the success and leverage that he had because he was backed up by people who shared his vision and were ready to, you know, keep pushing those issues. So it is, it's a mix. But at least one part of the mix is there in that you've got someone at the highest levels of government that could act. I think we have things like, you know, the Sunrise Movement, which is really, again, kids these days, they are pushing, right? We all need to be pushing in a similar way to push. Push
Greta Thunberg, of course, right? I mean, you've got.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of someone named Greta, let me ask the other interesting aspect of the data we have in front of us. The article written by Emily Atkins seems to me representative of a new, refreshing breed of younger, I don't know what the right word is, thought leaders, writers, oftentimes women who are, I think, are giving people ways to think about the climate topic that is new and different. I mean, I people come to mind as Mary Anise Hegler, right? We've got Emily Atkins, you've got these people at the Drilled podcast, that which is great. I mean, Do you see? I mean, is do you think this is a break from? I mean, God bless Bill McKibben, right? He's been writing stuff for a long time, still an inspiring writer, right? Andy Revkin has been going at it forever, but this new class of people seem to be. I don't know. Is it new? Tell me what's the story there.
I don't know, you know, so I'm reading this book called All We Can Save, which we talked about that on a prior show, but I highly recommend it. It's fantastic.
Say the name of the book again.
It's called All We Can Save, Truth, Courage, and Solutions for the Climate Crisis. And it's an anthology of women's, all articles written by wonderfully powerful women who have fantastic and unique perspectives. And it's edited by Dr. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson and Dr. Catherine Wilkinson. And it has articles from, you know, you name it, the woman who started Sunrise, Varshini Prakash, Janine Banyas is in there. Naomi Klein is in there. I mean, it's just, the list is impressive. A lot of these fabulous writers. And then it's also, Mary Anise Hegler is also in there, but it also has a lot of just perspectives you would never, that are very new for me. And they're coming from a place that's really a powerful, perhaps, in how we frame and discuss climate. And so it's great to have this out there. And I hope that it is inspiring others to walk their walk and talk their talk, literally.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's reassuring to see this resurgence of just smart people saying smart things, right? And once you've got that, you've got a long. All right, well, Mariah, well, we should put it down there. We'll put up links to. Let's see. I got to remember the Atkins article, the book, a link to the book you just mentioned, some other stuff that's relevant to this discussion. That'll be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. Check it out for the live links. If you want to ask a question or send a suggestion, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about, what you think is important. You can listen to the show on your smartphone using whatever app you're listening to now. Please ask your friends to listen to it on their favorite app, because the Climate Minute is on all of them nowadays. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. As always, D.R., we appreciate it. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.